Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise, and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-Trim. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
Registered in the U.S. Copyright Office. This year, send someone this eternal gift.
Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio Network. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. Just when you think it can't get more outrageous, you find out that Bush signed a signing statement, or included a signing statement, when he signed the postal reform bill into law back 5 days before Christmas and more than a month after the American public told him to take a hike. This is just astonishing. It was called the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act. You can tell it was written by Republicans. The postal accountability. I didn't know the postman was being unaccountable. I didn't know the mail carrier, be a man or woman, needed enhancement. But apparently that was the case. So this law was written by Republicans called the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act. And it deals with mundane reform measures like, postal rates and the board of directors of the USPS and little crappy stuff like that. But Bush... George W. Bush, when he sits down to sign it, there is a statement included. And Bush, in the statement, said he will construe an exception to that provision of the act that specifically prohibits opening first-class mail without a warrant. You know, it goes back to the Magna Carta. It goes back 700, 800 years. That doesn't register with Bush. But the idea that a person is secure in his home, his personal papers, his letters, now his emails, his telephone calls, that without a warrant arising from specific issues that the court wants to be, or the executive wants to be, decided by a court, absent those specific issues, well, you know how it goes. So the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act explicitly reinforced protections of first-class mail from searches without a court's approval. Now, we have the famous FISA court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, a judge who, during the age of Bush, has turned down maybe 2 out of several thousand requests. But that's not good enough for this little Nazi. and specifically his Nazi handlers. I mean, Bush, I don't even know that Bush is a Nazi. I really don't. He's a dork. He should have been baseball commissioner. He should have been, I don't know, on the county commission in some dusty county in Texas someplace. But the power in this country decided to make him president. Oh, my God. But the Nazis around, this is fascism, isn't it? I mean, my God. Warrantless opening of domestic mail. Warrantless eavesdropping. Outsourcing the United States military to private so-called security firms, which are nothing more than people who think they have a license to kill with no accountability to anybody or anything. I just don't know. I can't get my mind around this. He does this after the country has sent him a message. We don't like you. We don't like your policies. We can't remove you from office. The Congress could if they chose to, but we can't. So here's what we're going to do. The only thing we can. We're going to vote in enough people in the Democratic Party, even though we may not like the Democratic Party, we're going to vote enough people in to put the brakes on you, you fascist old bastard. That's what we're going to do. So what does Bush say? He gets the word on November 8th or 9th, you know, okay, the riot is over. You don't have a rubber stamp, a bunch of thugs and worms and cockroaches like Tom DeLay and Dennis Hastert and David Boner and the rest of these people to grease the skids for you. So it's time to stop. Your game is over. The jig is up. What does he do? He says, nah, not for me. It's not up. I'm a president. I'm a wartime president. So he puts a Steining statement on this stupid, nonsensical, unnecessary Postal Accountability Enhancement Act. And it leads me to believe that the only reason it was written and passed and sent to him was so he could add a signing statement. I like the way the New York Daily News reports that Bush's move came during the winter congressional recess and a year after his secret domestic electronic eavesdropping program was first revealed. Bush's actions caught Capitol Hill by surprise. Oh, really? Experts, of course, line up and said these new powers could be easily abused, could be, by this group of Nazis, and used to vacuum up large amounts of mail. Oh, my God. I wish I could write something, Kathy, that where I knew it would be seized and opened. People think I cuss on this program? Oh, my God. Somebody sent me a letter and said that, sent me an email and said, regarding this and said, well, here's what we ought to do. You know, make the envelope, first of all, this is my suggestion, make the envelope look eminently conspiratorial or openable, you know, like put the return address, I don't know, Muhammad al-Bomb Thrower, and address it to the secret cabal of Al-Qaeda, 823 Baltimore Street, Washington, D.C., or something, you know, something like that. So guarantee it's going to be flagged. And what do you have inside of it? Can I say this on the air? What you can have inside of it is a piece of or a strip of bathroom tissue that has been used for what it was designed for. And if we had like a million of those going through the mail or 5 million, my goodness, just think, because that's what this is. That's exactly what this is. Once more, Bush and the fascists behind him drop their trousers and take a dump on the Constitution. Here we are again. Here we are once again. It doesn't stop, does it? It just does it. Nothing, absolutely nothing. Now, that leads me to Ms. Pelosi swearing in today, which I thought was a little Yeah, you know, putting all the kids up there on the speaker's podium. Come on. But that's all right. It was history being made. Okay. Go, Madam Chairwoman, go. But what are they going to do about this? What are they going to do about these signing statements? Because the signing statements that have been used, this president, as much of a half-wit as he is, he's been ordered by his handlers to use the signing statement privilege. I don't know where it came from. But it is a direct contravention of the law that has been passed by the Congress and laid on his desk for signature. Instead of vetoing it, he contravenes the law and writes something in this instance, in every instance, exactly the opposite of what the lawmakers intended. Now, if that's not an impeachable offense, Madam Pelosi, Senator Reid, what the hell is? What is an impeachable offense that this president has to commit in order for the Democratic leadership now to say, okay, enough, the Constitution comes into play here? Oh, man. White House spokeswoman Emily Lorimer denied Bush was claiming any new authority. She said,
in certain circumstances, the Constitution does not require warrants for reasonable searches, which everybody getting their bloomers in a wad for.
I don't email, however. And there's a reason. I don't want you reading my personal stuff. And we're guarding the civil liberties by monitoring the program on a regular basis, by having the folks at NASA, the legal team, as well as the Inspector General, monitor the program, and we're briefing Congress.
Yeah, well, why would you want the space agency to monitor your telephone surveillance program, you moronic halfwit? Oh, God. Oh, well. So, like I say, you know, all the pomp and circumstance today of the Democrats taking over and the Republicans already whining and peeing their pants about how nasty the Democrats are going to be to them. This is amazing, isn't it? I can never help but notice the juvenileness of adults who are Republican members of the House and the Senate, especially the House. I take Molly practically at least every other day, some days every day, to one of the local playgrounds around here where they have all the equipment. And the children on the playground it is easier for them to get along, to get what they want, to give a little bit, get a little bit. And I never get the feeling that I'm around sniveling little brats. I get the feeling when I go to these public playgrounds, which is where I take Molly, that I'm around kids who are being raised by parents who, most of us are at least partly aware of how to raise children. When I listen to these Republicans, they're like sniffling little third graders or second graders or kindergartners. I've never seen anything like this in my life. For 12 years, these evil little bastards have used every trick in the book to deny representation to the people in this country who elected a Democrat to go to the House or a Democrat to go to the Senate. The Republicans have used every trick they can come up with to stop the Democratic Party from participating in the democratic process. They've whined, they have corrupted the system, they have stolen, looted, defrauded. They have demonized gays while half their membership is gay. They have talked about how awful abortion is while half of their daughters and wives get abortions anytime they want to. They're sneaky, lying, deceptive, evil little snots. So here they are today, on the first day of the universe trying to right itself, Republicans were never meant to govern. Here we are on the first day of a new session of the Congress, the universe trying to right itself, and these sniveling little brats are running around like they have peed their pants, looking for someone to change them, whining and weeping and crying about how evil, how unfair the Democrats are already. They make me sick. I just can't believe these people. I've never seen anything like it. I can't believe these are adults. It's astonishing. The postal bill that I was just talking about that tried to re-enshrine the sanctity of your letters, my letters. You know, this is kind of funny because who among us under the age of 55 still writes letters? But I got this this email here from Matthew in Wisconsin. He writes, one note, that bill, H.R. 6407, was co-sponsored by Henry Waxman. The actual text of the bill is as follows. Here it is. The Postal Service shall maintain one or more classes of mail for the transmission of letters sealed against inspection. The rate for each such class shall be uniform throughout the United States, its territories, and possessions. One such class shall provide for the most expeditious handling and transportation of forwarded mail matter by the Postal Service. That would be first class. No letter of such a class of domestic origin shall be opened except under authority of a search warrant authorized by law or by an officer or employee of the Postal Service for the sole purpose of determining an address at which the letter can be delivered, or pursuant to the authorization of the addressee. End quote. Now, this was passed by a voice vote, Matthew writes, in the House and agreed to by unanimous consent in the Senate. If the signing statement for this bill isn't a high crime or misdemeanor, what is? And Matthew winds up by saying, one of the first acts that the new democratically controlled Congress should take is to have hearings on this signing statement and signing statements in general. Oh, God. It makes me appreciate the fact that Representative Charles Rangel, who now moves up to the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, has evicted Dick Cheney from the office in the Capitol that Cheney said, that's mine. Cheney had taken over. The Republicans gave him the office traditionally that goes to the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee because Republicans are all evil, nasty bastards. So one of the first things Rangel did was tell Cheney to get the hell out of my office. And Cheney had to, of course. I would have liked to have seen the movers come for that. Way to go, Charlie.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Twenty-six before the hour. Aha! Cindy is calling from Sparks, Maryland. Cindy Sheehan. Hey, Cindy.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. Happy New Year.
You too. Thank you.
You still out there raising hell, huh?
Well, we still have to. The troops are still in Iraq, and the maniac's still in the White House.
I hear you.
And the Democrats aren't doing anything. So.
Yeah, I hear that too. I've been following you every single day. We're real aware on the Malloy program how you're continuing the struggle. And how's your health? How you feeling?
I'm doing much better. Yeah.
You are.
Much better. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Well, what's going on? I know you were in D.C. You had. Tell us what happened the other day when you took over the microphones. It was what was that event?
Well, they were the Goals for Families for Peace was walking the halls of Congress yesterday, and it's called Our Walk for Change. We realize that the progressive peace movement in America is, and the grassroots movement are what put the Democrats back in power. And we went out to vote for change. We want impeachment on the table, and we want no more funding for war. We want the Democrats to work on the war, and that's the thing that they have to work on first. So we were walking the halls of Congress, and we found out they were having a press conference.
Mm-hmm.
So we went up to the press conference, and they were talking about lobby reform, and which is a good thing, and their agenda is very good, but they're not going to be able to accomplish anything else while our troops are in Iraq and George Bush is president, and they're spending $10 million an hour on this illegal and immoral war. So we just started chanting, de-escalate, investigate, troops home now, and the leadership showed their mettle and turned around and walked away from us, and the press invited me up to the microphone, so went up and outlined the progressive agenda for what we want the Democrats to do.
Why, in your opinion, Cindy, why is why are Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid saying that, and others, saying that impeachment's off the table? What the hell is going on here?
Well, I think it's because what I've asked them point blank, the representatives I've talked to, is they say that they're afraid of losing the election in 2008. They're afraid of losing the presidency. And I just look at them and say, you have to be kidding me. I lost my son. You know, 700,000 Iraqis are dead and Americans are dead, and you guys are afraid of losing an election. And when we know that almost three-fourths of this country wants the troops home, the troops want to come home, the generals want them to come home, the Iraqi people want them to come home, and I can't believe that they're holding back on the Iraq thing and about impeachment. You know, I have no idea why they're not wanting to hold this man accountable for what he's done. It's their constitutional duty.
Well, that's the thing. When I hear Democratic leaders, before they were moved back into positions of power, after the election, when they said impeachment's off the table because we don't want this to happen, we don't want that to happen, it raises the issue. Don't these people understand that the Constitution demands that this psychopath be removed from office legally and peacefully if possible? The Constitution demands it.
Absolutely.
And I remember during the impeachment of Bill Clinton how these moral midgets chanted about rule of law, rule of law, rule of law. That's what the Republicans talked about.
Right.
I don't quite get this. I'll tell you this, Cindy, and I imagine you would agree. Those of us who supported the Democrats in order to get them into power to be a check and balance and a removal squad on this president, we also have the power to put them back into the minority. And if that happens, then this country goes fascist. And I don't understand why they don't know that, why Pelosi and Reid and the rest of these people don't understand that really and truly the power still rests with us.
Well, absolutely. And that's what we have to keep. That's why we were in Congress yesterday. That's why we chanted. You know, these issues of accountability and peace transcend politics. And that's what they have to keep thinking. It's a human issue. It's not a political issue. Accountability is not about politics. It's about restoring the rule of law in this country. It's about restoring our country. George Bush has admitted to crimes using a microphone at a press conference.
Mm-hmm.
Why wasn't he hauled off to jail then when he admitted to spying on Americans without their due process?
Good question.
When he admitted to breaking FISA laws.
Mm-hmm.
Why wasn't he hauled off then? Why is he still in power? It's not an option for Congress to investigate and impeach. It's mandatory.
Well, Cindy, I know you got places to go and things to do. One more question here. Are you, I've asked myself this question and I'm wavering. Are you generally optimistic right now or still just wondering what the hell has happened to this country? Where are you mentally, emotionally about this election and the Democrats coming in?
I'm optimistic because I know the American people went out to vote for change. Now we just have to get them out of their comfortable and places to get out and protest and to sit in their congresspeople's offices, to come to national protests like one on January 27th here in Washington, D.C., if they can, to the three-quarters of America who want the troops home and who want George Bush held accountable. They need to start coming out and showing – you know, themselves too, being present with us to do these things. And then when they do, then that's when the Democrats will act. I'm not optimistic about this Congress, but I am optimistic about the American people. More and more and more and more we're getting pissed off. And we had 80 people there yesterday with us walking the halls of Congress from all over the world. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it is really a lot.
It's going to take hundreds of thousands of people in the streets.
Absolutely. We need at least 1 million on January 27th just to shut down this city.
All right, Cindy, stay in touch. I mean,
I will. It was nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, please stay in touch. We've kind of lost touch with each other. I know you are out there doing the good work, but stay in touch, all right?
Okay, well, great. Thank you.
All right, Cindy, take care.
Okay, I love you guys. Thank you.
Love you, too. Take care. Take care. When you think that the face of whatever anti-war movement or protest in this country is still Cindy Sheehan. After more war than we were involved in World War II, after more lies by a factor of 10, 20, 30 than those lies that got us into Vietnam, with George Bush on the verge of ordering more people to die in Iraq, and Cindy Sheehan walks the halls of Congress with 80 people. I've said this before. I said a couple of years ago, and no offense to your schema or what you do, but I'm ashamed. I am ashamed that I am an American. I am ashamed because of what this country has come to represent globally. But beyond that, I'm ashamed that I am not doing more to remove this thug from office, to try to restore law in this country. I am ashamed. It is, and because I talk about this every night, and because you tune in every night, you probably have a high shame threshold too, just like I do, because we focus on this a lot. And for that reason, whenever I start to waver and start to think, Jesus, God, you know, there's not a whole lot I can do. As a radio a program host, so what I'm going to have to do is just shut this bastard down and take to the streets like Cindy Sheehan does, and try to organize, and I don't know what to do because I know I've done that before, I know how to do it, but I don't, and I get ashamed, and I've got 10,000 good reasons, you know, I've got a 2.5-year-old, I've got grandkids I'm trying to help, I've got a family to maintain. I've got bills to pay. And then I think to myself, Jesus, God, that is such a suck excuse. So here we are, 3.5 years into Bush's murderous adventure to prove to his mommy that his is as big as his daddy's. And the face of the anti-war movement in this country is still Cindy Sheehan. And good for her. I mean, you know. Okay, I'm not here to beat myself up or beat you up tonight. Those are thoughts that cross my mind. I hope that Cindy is, her optimism is well placed. I think she said she's optimistic about the American public holding the Democrats to account. I hope that happens. I know those of us who have been waiting for the Democrats to put the brakes on this murderous bastard in the White House and his cohort of thugs. I know we're kind of impatient. We were talking immediately after the election as if this new Congress had already been seated, and it only happened today at noon. So, what's going to happen tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the first 100 days and this and that and this and that. I know we're impatient. I know we've got to let this gang gear up, get used to, especially new members of Congress, get used to the digs, get used to the rules and regulations and so on and so forth. But I am so sick, I am sick to my stomach of hearing Democratic leaders talk about reconciliation, reaching across the aisle, and we're going to be nice to these rat bastards who have taken this country into hell. I am so sick of it.
I'm sick of hearing the make nice, make nice. This is not what the Republicans did. And I know the Republicans are out of power now. But Democrats are not Republicans. We have a reason to be pissed off. We have a reason to stand up on our hind legs and say to these filthy Republicans, no, screw you. Sit down and shut up while we try to save the country that you have tried to destroy. I'm sick of the make nice. I'm sick of the kissy face. When I watched John Boehner reach over and kiss Nancy Pelosi on the cheek today when he handed her the gavel, I thought I was going to lose my breakfast. I'm sick of make nice. I don't want make nice. I want people arrested. I want people impeached. I want people on trial. I want to see somebody on the gallows. That's what I want to see.
Because life's too short to listen to right-wing radio, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 9 before the hour, and excuse me. Thanks to one of our listeners, Tiffany, in Sparks, Maryland, who set that phone call up. We had not scheduled Cindy Sheehan to be on the program at all, but again, one of our steady listeners, Tiffany in Sparks, Maryland. You've heard her on the program before. Many times as a caller. Thanks, Tiffany. If you can hear us, which unless you have Sirius satellite radio in that area, you can't. But all right, let's do some phone calls here before the break. Gene is calling from the Bay Area. I guess that would be listening on the Quake, right?
Hello.
Yeah, listening on the Quake. Is that what you're doing?
Yes, I am.
Hey, Gene, how are you?
Fine. Boy, I'm following Cindy Sheehan. Wow.
There you go.
Yeah. It's just incredible how she each day transforms her mourning for her son into this force for change. I'm just so moved by her.
I am too. I really am.
And I mean, you were saying, Mike, I think there would be more Cindy Sheehan Americans if it weren't for this frozen corporate media. You know, I remember back during the Vietnam War, there were lots of people mm-hmm. who were allowed to be seen in their demands for making change.
That's true.
But no one's being allowed, not even musicians. There are people out there writing the protest songs like what sometimes that you play, but they're not allowing them to become icons of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
It's just frightening. Yeah.
You know, that's very true, and we've talked about that on this program before. The utter and absolute co-conspiratorial nature of the media now, especially television, notably television, in its refusal, its absolute refusal, to even cover anti-government demonstrations, to cover protests, to provide any sort of coverage to speakers from all sorts of anti-war, pro-peace, anti-Bush organizations. I think that's what one of the things that so much enrages me now, but I think that's one of the things that enrages me the most is that the industry or the function of which I'm a part, and that is mass communications, has so thoroughly whored itself and become absolutely useless and worthless to the American public where it concerns keeping us informed so we know what the hell to do.
And they locked us out. They locked us out from playing any role or having any image in it at all.
Well, that's one of the reasons I am so glad that the rise of the blogs, the bloggers, the people on the Internet who said, no, we're not going to sit back and accept this. We're going to establish our own media. Now, I realize that is, you know, it's still in its infancy and people are still trying to figure out how to get the message out using the Internet. But thank God for the Internet.
Right. You know, I originally called about Bush's warrantless seizure and spying in our mailboxes.
Yeah.
And it occurs to me that it's awfully convenient for him to use this sort of thing to intimidate all of us, like seniors who want to be able to attain affordable medications from Canada.
Uh-huh.
Or people like me who want to donate amounts to groups that I want to support.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary.
It is. It is.
And it's unacceptable.
And I think you're right. Most of the reason they do this is not necessarily to, they can't possibly, they being the Bush crime family, they can't possibly process billions of pieces of mail. The only reason they even let this information out is for the intimidation factor. You're absolutely right. Just to make people think, oh, geez, well, I better not send that check to the Islamic charity that helps children, or I better not, you know, whatever it is that is being considered, I better not do that, because if I do and somebody opens my mail, I'm going to be caught. Oh, gosh, what do I do? What do I do? That's a very real aspect of this, I think.
Thank you so much for taking my call, Mike. I'm really glad you're there.
Me too. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it, Jean. I'm glad I'm here, because if I'm not here, I'd have to be somewhere, and there's no telling where. You know, if you're not where you are, you may wind up being somewhere where you're not, and that could be an unnerving experience. Right? Bill is calling from Phoenix. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Mike.
How you doing?
I'm doing just great. How do we get stronger, Mike?
Eat your Wheaties.
That too. But we're stronger when we know that in unity we're stronger, right?
That's right.
How'd you know today while you were in the store grocery shopping that the man or woman next to you might stand for impeachment just like you? How'd you know looking at him?
Yeah, you don't know looking at
him. Wouldn't it be marvelous? Like Cindy does every day. Takes a protest where she is, when she's there. We did one simple thing to identify ourselves. You know what I do, Mike? I get dressed in the morning, and I look for my heart, and I take a safety pin and a little piece of red cloth.
That's right. You're
talking, and I pin it over there.
Yeah, you've told
and
me.
And people say to me, what's that for? And I say, thanks for asking. You know who Cindy Sheehan is?
That's great. That's a way to do it. Bill, you're a prince. Thanks for checking in. I got to go. We've got a station break and top of the hour coming here. Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it very much. Always good to hear from you. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Well, a little rush of emails here. Every single one in favor of the idea of let's not play nicey-nice with Republicans. I mean, what does that accomplish? Really, what does it accomplish? Any progressive legislation that the Democratic Party chooses to write and pass over the next 2 years is going to be vetoed by this half-witted bastard in the White House. That's a given. We know this. Any legislation that is partly progressive will be tampered with by the Republican minority as it goes to the House and the Senate committees to work out their differences. We know that.
We also know, and you could tell by the vote today, to confirm Nancy Pelosi as the new speaker, an historic event. It was an historic event. Not a single Republican voted in the House to confirm her as the Speaker of the House, if I read the totals correctly. Not a single Republican. So why then are the Democrats falling all over their own asses to reach out to these thugs and make nice? You know, watching John Boehner's slobbery lips going up against Nancy Pelosi's cheek when he handed over the gavel, like I said, it made me almost lose my breakfast. I don't quite get this. I realize that the House and the Senate are very exclusive clubs, at least they think they are. But after being treated like so much bathroom tissue used by the Republican Party, why are the Democrats turning around now and say, oh, thank you, sir, may I have another? This is crazy. This is crazy. And then to watch regardless of this and that and this and that, it was an historic moment. First time a woman has been the Speaker of the House. First time in our long, bloody, nasty history. So you would think that in the spirit of bipartisanship, in the spirit of healing, in the spirit of reaching across the aisle, that these pissant, thuggish Republicans could have at least applauded the historical moment, if not applauding Nancy Pelosi. I watched the camera panned onto this large lump of body fat sitting in the back, Dennis Hastert, with this look on his face. I don't know, like he's on Valium or too much, too many dinner pastries or glasses of wine, sitting there clumping his stubby hands together. It looked like some kind of an obese, weird, scary puppet. Clap, clap, clap. You can just hear the rolls of flesh in his hands kind of mushing together. You know, filthy, filthy Republicans. God. I shouldn't even call them Republicans because the Republican Party used to be manageable. Spirit of bipartisanship. Okay, I'm all for that. First, let's impeach these two thugs at the top of the heap. Pelosi becomes president, and then the House can determine, or the Senate. I'm not sure how it works anymore. I don't care. Don't send me anything to explain it to me. Okay, but the House and the Senate, or whoever, can decide who becomes the president, the vice president, interim president, vice president, just like we did with Ford and Rockefeller. Until Rockefeller had a heart attack from boinging his secretary, you know, keels over dead. Then they have to come up with somebody else. Who was it? Dole? I don't know. I have no idea. Don't care. But get rid of these war-mongering, murderous, lying bastards who have tried to destroy the republic. Make nice? I feel like, you know, somebody who has been in some sort of detention for 6 years, and now I'm supposed to turn around and kiss the face of the rat bastard who's been holding me in detention? I'm supposed to make nice with the person who has put in positions of power in the regulatory agencies, people who are there to destroy the regulations, to make the environment toxic for my children and grandchildren. People who've consciously lied, like all these ExxonMobil bastards who control Dick Cheney, lied about global climate change that is occurring at a much more rapid pace than even the hesitant scientists were willing to say. Here we go. And I'm supposed to make nice with these people. And that's not even to mention a war that this rat bastard took us into based on lies by his whole administration. They were all in on it. And the murderers and thugs and convicted felons and criminals that Bush has put in positions of power. And the ones that do get convicted, like Ken Lay, croaks before justice can be served. cowardly bastard gives himself a heart attack so he can die. Man! And now we're supposed to make nice with these pigs? I'd rather get down in the sty and wallow around in pig droppings than deal with these people. What's the matter with the Democratic Party leadership? Why are they even talking to these people? Why don't they do what the Republicans did today? Oh, I know, you're supposed to turn the other cheek. Oh, turn the other cheek, my ass. This is not a graduating class of divinity students. This is politics. In the age of Bush, it's a murder sport. It has to do with blood and excrement and human waste and death and flayed bodies and red mist and children being blown up and thousands upon thousands upon thousands of veterans of this war coming home desperately in need of mental help. And we're supposed to make nice with these animals, round them up, cage them off, bring the ones who need to be tried to court, try them, convict them, sentence them, carry out the sentence, make nice. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know, I'm putting too fine a point on it, right? Interpress Service article, Iraq vets left in physical and mental agony. On New Year's Eve, the number of U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq passed 3,000. By Tuesday, the death toll had reached 3,004. But the number of injured has far outstripped the dead, with the VA reporting that more than 150,000 veterans of the Iraq War are receiving disability benefits. Advances in military technology are keeping the death rate much lower than during the Vietnam War and World War II. Dr. Colonel Vito Ambashini, a urologist and state surgeon with the California Army National Guard, told Interpress Service, but soldiers who survive attacks are often severely disabled for life. He says, if you lost an arm or a leg in Vietnam, you were also tremendously injured in your chest and abdomen, which were not protected by the armor plates back then. Now, your heart and chest and lungs are protected by armor, leaving only your extremities exposed. Dr. Imbashini just returned from a four-month deployment to Germany, where he treated the worst of U.S. war wounded. He said that an extremely high number of wounded soldiers are coming home with their arms or legs amputated. Ambashini said he amputated the genitals of one or two men every day. He told Interpress Service, quote, I walk into the operating room and the general surgeons are doing their work, and there is the body of this Navy SEAL who is a great physical specimen to behold, and his abdomen is open. They're exploring both intestines. He's missing both legs below the knee. One arm is blown off. He's got incisions on his thighs to relieve the pressure on the parts of his legs that are possibly going to survive, and there's genital injuries, and you just want to cry. End quote. Make nice with these rat murderous bastards? No, never.
They misunderstood the fact that we love a neighbor in need. They misunderstood the compassion of our country. I think they misunderstood the will and determination of the commander-in-chief, too.
You little twit. Let's have your genitals blown off and your arms and legs blown off, and then let's misunderestimate your willingness to do whatever it is you were just talking about, you moron. The group Veterans for America, formerly the Vietnam Veterans of America Foundation, estimates 70,000 Iraq War veterans have gone to the VA for mental health care. According to documents obtained by the National Security Archive at George Washington University, 25% of veterans of the so-called Global War on Terror have filed disability compensation and pension benefit claims with the VA. My God. According to the military newspaper Stars and Stripes, service members with, quote, a psychiatric disorder in remission, or whose residual symptoms do not impair duty performance, may be considered for duty downrange. In other words, they send them back. The military now lists post-traumatic stress disorder as a, quote, treatable problem, end quote. Steve Robinson, the director of Veterans Affairs for Veterans for America, says, quote, as a layman and a former soldier, that's ridiculous. If I've got a soldier who's on Ambien to go to sleep and Seroquel and Quinapin and all kinds of other psychotropic meds, I don't want them to have a weapon in their hand and to be part of my team because they're a risk to themselves and to others. But apparently the military has its own view of how well a soldier can function under those conditions and is gambling that they can be successful. Robinson also says his organization has documented the existence of at least 1,000 homeless veterans of the Iraq War. It goes on and on, Truth Seeker, on and on and on. And now I watch bright, beautiful, sunny Nancy Pelosi having her face sucked by Boehner, this creep bastard Republican from Ohio, and smile and pass the gavel. And what am I supposed to do? Sit here and go, oh, yeah, well, this is how it works in a democracy. Everything's okay. And Bush wants to surge. Yeah. At Daily Coast, James Risser writes, put down the champagne, Nancy. We've had enough backslapping, enough self-congratulations. You have a 100-hour plan. Go ahead and attempt implementation of those items. I believe you will fail to do anything but end up compromising too much, and the first 100 hours will lack the significant bite that we would like to see. But you seem intent on it, so have at it. You are under the illusion, Ms. Pelosi, that you need a consensus with the enemy party to act, and that is simply misguided and wrong. This diary, James Risser's, outlines a better plan that could be achieved in a single afternoon of work by your staff and yourself. No Republicans required. 1. Immediately draft a joint resolution stating that it is the sense of Congress that the President of the United States does not have the authority to expand the global war on terror to the countries of Iran and Syria without explicit approval of both houses. 2. Order investigations by John Conyers Judiciary Committee for violations of the War Crimes Act of 1996 by senior members of the Bush administration. 3. Order investigations by a subcommittee of the House Judiciary Committee into war profiteering and treason by vendors involved in Iraq, vendors like Halliburton, Bechtel, and CACI. 4. Immediately create a joint resolution of Congress that incorporates Senator Feingold's Senate bill calling for the immediate redeployment of our troops and set a date in the next 2 weeks for a 12-hour debate and a vote on the resolution. 5. Set a date in the next 2 weeks for a 12-hour debate followed by a holding off of the vote for an indefinite time on Representative Rangel's bill regarding the drafting of 18-year-old citizens to serve in the military. And 6. Immediately draft an amendment to the Detainee Treatment Act of 1996, deleting all of the existing language and inserting language that recognizes the priority of the Geneva Convention, Common Article 4, and for other purposes. Risser goes on to say, Speaker Pelosi, you have that title for a reason. The American people want a change, and not an incremental one. I do not want to hear the word consensus from you or any other member of your party for at least 6 months. You have an entire list of strictly partisan activities complete. There is absolutely nothing that the Republicans have that you need. Send them all back to their dark caves where they belong and get your party in order. Finally, never forget that you are there to stop this administration in its murderous tracks. If you do not act quickly, effectively, with passion and strength, you will once again become simply Representative Pelosi. And your one chance at making an historic difference will become merely a footnoted failure in a much larger battle to take back this country from the vermin in the White House and return it to its people and to their Constitution. Someone with greater passion will replace you, and no one will mind your leaving, but all will remember your failure.
Perhaps the most important lesson that I learned in Vietnam is that you cannot fight a guerrilla war with conventional forces.
Yeah. Okay, chuckle nuts. From Cliff in Fresno, he writes, "The irony that I was immediately struck with this morning while watching the ceremonies on television, the swearing, was that of Dick Cheney administering an oath to others, which refers to protecting and defending the Constitution of the United States from enemies, foreign and domestic, etc., a very oath which he also took, but clearly, promptly violated and doesn't believe in himself." Yeah, I hear you, Cliff. I watched some of that today, too. When I finally, you know, got up and stumbled around the house and had some coffee, and the first thing I see on television is Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and Dick Cheney. I thought, what has happened? Has Russia attacked us? What is going on? Why are these people together on my television screen? And then I look closer, and they're laughing about something. And Bill is reaching out and touching this filthy piece of human waste. No, not his wife. I'm talking about Cheney. And he's touching him and stroking him. And I wanted, again, to try. I hadn't even eaten breakfast. I wanted to throw up yesterday's breakfast. And I'm sitting there watching this, and I'm like, Kathy. I couldn't even scream. It was so horrible. Kathy! Kathy comes running into the study, and she said, What? I said, la. I'm pointing at the television. Clinton and Cheney. Like it was, I don't know, an alumni meeting at some university. This is way beyond me. I don't get this. This is why I am confined to a little talk radio studio. Because I don't understand this. And I get, you know, no more so than most people, I guess, the potential to just start ripping things to pieces. When I see this on television, when I see John Boehner kissing Nancy Pelosi, when I see Bill and Hillary standing there with this evil son of a bitch who would cut both their throats in a second and let the blood go into a goblet that he would then drink. And they're standing there, the three of them, like, oh, hail and farewell. Blessed be, merry meet. I'm sorry, don't write me now if you're a Wiccan and say, ah! Back to your phone calls. I got to stop screaming here. Alan is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hi, Alan.
Hi, nice to talk to you again. It's nice to hear you on my real radio again.
Oh, we're so glad to be back in South Florida that one of these nights I'll just scream.
Well, that's great. Well, not while the phone's in my ear, please.
Yeah, okay.
I got prompted initially to call you. You know, the call always changes as more people talk about different things.
Right,
talk
sure.
About different subjects. But initially, after you spoke with Cindy and, you know, you questioned your role in all this and that, you know, should be out on the streets with people like her. Well, that's a separate decision. I just want you to realize the tremendous role you and your program play.
Well,
and not to forget that. In other words, if that were to disappear, that would make it harder for everybody else to do stuff. Don't forget that.
Okay.
That is really an important place where people gather and
that's true. And we build this program is not solutions. You want solutions, you listen to Tom Hartman. What we are about is getting together every night and screaming. And I guess, you know, solutions are part of everything, but so is screaming.
Well, it comes out of that when you release some of that stuff.
Well, that's true.
I want to make a couple comments. I mean, it's almost difficult to talk about any of this because it's all so insane.
I know.
Before one person called in and said, well, you know, we should get together and go, you know, talk about stuff, do stuff, but it's because of the media. Well, that's true. But I mean, yeah, the Democratic Party has acted in the same way. It put Michael Moore in a pen during the convention and doesn't talk about rallies. It tries to hush up that something is, people are going to protest against the war. We won't talk about that, you know. So this corporate mentality has sort of like covered everything. We're so used to feeling that the only legitimate thing comes out of a corporatized mentality. I work in an art school here and, I sometimes hear, we talk about customer service as though we're talking about, and we're talking about students. I mean, it's been so pervasive, the idea of it isn't legitimate unless it comes out of a corporate boardroom. And that's where all decisions, you know, we've bought into the idea that's where all decisions are made, all opinions are heard. And so if we don't get to the point, the last time I managed to call in and speak, we talked about needing to talk with one another. We have to talk to our neighbors, their colleagues, and so forth. But it's also about developing a national discourse, which we don't really have. And that was the problem. We went into this last election talking about winning, defeating them, but we didn't talk about what the problem was, what they are doing to this nation. We didn't talk about how the enemies, or who the enemy is, and what kind of nasty things they have done, which would have brought even more people out to vote, I believe. And so unless we find our voice, I mean, it's not coming from the Democratic Party, certainly not from the leadership there.
Okay, now, I would disagree with you a bit there, Alan. I spent the past 6 years bitching and screaming about what the Republicans have done, and prior to that, when I was on the air in Chicago. Granted, if you're referring to so-called mainstream media.
Of course. You're the exception that proves the rule.
Well, there's more than me.
There are a few of you. Yes, more than you.
Yeah.
But it's not enough, quantitatively speaking.
Right, okay, so I understand what you're saying.
Share of the pie. I mean, we're talking, way under 10%. We're talking about 5% or less or something like that.
Right.
And we need more of that. And that should be one of the things in the national discourse that should come out of an opposition party. But, you know, Bill Clinton presided over the further concentration of media. People seem to forget that.
Oh, no, yeah, not me, because, you know, I was struggling to try to maintain in this business back in the mid-90s when he signed the Media Consolidation Act, whatever it was called, and I couldn't believe it. I could feel the knife slipping between my shoulder blades by a Democratic president. I just couldn't believe it.
Right. Well, I used to do a little bit of community radio here, listener-supported radio, and it's tougher every day to do anything like that, to be granted a license.
It's tough to do commercial radio. When you take a look at the consolidation that has occurred in the commercial broadcast in this country, what do I keep reading? I know I'm going to get these numbers wrong, but something like six media companies own, I don't know, 85% of media access in this country. Now, when you get to that point, then it becomes a danger unless those six media companies are dedicated to preserving freedom. And even then, it's questionable. And I don't think any media company is dedicated to preserving freedom as their number one goal. Their number one goal is to make a profit. Even here at Nova M, if we don't show a profit, we disappear. So that's our number one goal. We've got to turn a profit. Any media company has got to turn a profit. But you would think out of these six massive conglomerates, of which Nova M is not one, you would think that at least one, maybe two, if there was a God, three, would be dedicated to preserving liberty / making a profit. You understand what I'm saying with that?
Well, we kind of have to demand it because it's not going to happen by itself. We have to change the discourse one way or another.
I hear you. All right.
Alan, a new narrative. Paint a new picture for America of where we should be going. We all have to participate.
That's the truth. Thanks, Alan.
Thanks for your work.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right. Appreciate it, Alan. Thanks for checking in. You know, Alan was talking about marginalizing Michael Moore. What the hell did Michael Moore do? Huh? Michael Moore is a great filmmaker. I read so-called liberals, even people who write for The Nation, for Christ's sake, who in a very snarky, snide way, get in Michael Moore's case because he is the celluloid equivalent of a radio talk show screamer like me. Not that I'm on the level of Michael Moore. I'm just saying. You know, they bust his ass because he doesn't try to seek balance. He doesn't present this side and that side. That's not how you find justice. That's not what this is about anymore. So the Democrats marginalize him. They treat him like some crazed uncle who lives up in the attic and eats rats and cockroaches and only comes out at Christmas time or Thanksgiving. In the meantime, the Republicans take a real murderous, child-molesting bug like Tom DeLay and practically canonize him. And that's the difference between, one of the essential differences between the Republican and Democratic parties. The Republicans will take the people on the fringes of their party and turn them into icons. Oh, we love this guy. Oh, my God. He raises money. He kicks ass. He believes in our Lord and Savior, Jesus H. Christ. He's in favor of war and capital punishment and death. Did I mention he believes in our Lord and Savior, Jesus H. Christ? But then you have somebody like Michael Moore who has the unmitigated gall to produce something like Fahrenheit 9/11. Ah, the evil pro-commie son of a bitch. And that's coming from Democrats. So yeah, I get what Alan's talking about. Oh. Kissy face today. Okay, Democratic Party leadership. Kiss all the faces in D.C. you want today. Take the gavels. Grab ass with Dick Cheney. And let's see if tomorrow you will stand up on your hind legs and butcher these bastards.
Cleaning up America, one flying monkey at a time. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Regarding media consolidation, Derek in Terre Haute, Indiana writes, Mike, you said you spent time in Chicago. WLS, which is where I worked, was such a liberal radio station during the 60s and 70s. Now all that comes from it is conservative crud from a Democratic town like Chicago. How do they get away with it? How can this be? Derek in Terre Haute. Well, again, it's the consolidation. WLS is owned by ABC Radio Network. ABC Radio Network, in turn, syndicates Sean Hannity, one of the most useless wastes of human DNA since Rush Limbaugh, the pig man himself. But all you hear on WLS, and Derek is right, are these retreads, these old farts that have been there since God was a teenager, and this right-wing drivel all day long in Chicago, for God's sake. It's not much different from New York. How many liberals operate in New York City? How many operate in San Francisco? Well, San Francisco is a little bit different. They have some intelligence where it concerns programming. How about Los Angeles? But Chicago, for God's sake, Chicago. And the big station there, WLS, and the other big station, WGN, WGN is just pap and nonsense. WLS is right-wing hog snot. Let's go back to calls. Greg is checking in from North Carolina. Hey, Greg.
Hey there.
Go ahead. You're on, sir.
Yeah, all right, I got a question for you. What does the H stand for in Jesus H. Christ?
Holy man, I think.
Is that what it stands for?
I don't know. I have no idea.
It's
an epithet. It's an epithet. You know, I say that when I'm enraged.
Yeah, I hear you. That sounds quite often. I just started listening to your show, and I wanted to tell you that I am ready for the troops to come home, too. But I have to ask you something. Out of all those troops that are over there, how many of them was drafted?
None. Let me ask you something. How many of them were... No, let me ask you something. How many were in the National Guard? How many were in the reserve? How many thought they would be lied into a combat zone? How many soldiers do you know who willingly accept 2 and 3 and 4 deployments to a war zone?
Wait, all I know...
Greg, you know maybe 10% of what you should know. You know, people make that argument, right wingers, and apparently you are one, make that argument. These are all volunteers. That doesn't mean a damn thing. These are people who were conned and lied to, who were told join the National Guard and protect your state, take care of natural disasters that arise in North Carolina or Mississippi or Alabama. Join the reserves and get some extra money. Go to camp on the weekends and be ready in case this country's attacked. So don't run that kind of scam crap around this program, Greg. I'm not interested.
No, but I do have to ask you another question. Now, thank you for your input on that.
Well, you're being a smart ass with me, and I don't tolerate smart asses, so I'm going to let you go. Take care. Have a nice life. Try not to call again. You know, don't say you appreciate my input, okay? You can figure this stuff out, Greg. People ask me those kinds of questions, you're baiting me. That's all you're doing. If you are so damn stupid as to not know that the United States military right now is comprised to a huge degree of people who never said that they would sign up to go fight in a war we were lied into, then you are a fool. And I don't like being baited on this program. Let me tell you something, Greg, buddy. I don't come to your place of work, whatever the hell you do, and start jamming with your head. Okay? Don't do it here, because you lose, because I got the dump button. Okay? Very simple. There are not enough troops left in the United States to protect this country from a real threat. And Bush has made every American citizen a target by his war on Muslims, not just the military. And what the hell did 9/11 have to do with Iraq? And how many grandmas in the reserves died under Bill Clinton? Nah, to hell with you, Greg. Don't call this program with your snarky little comments about, last time I checked, they were all, how many of them were drafted? If you don't know the answer to that, you're a damn fool. And you do know the answer, which means you're just trying to jerk me around, and that's not going to happen, pal. That's not going to help, because I'm 1,000 times smarter than you, and I'm much more of an American than you are, and I have patriotism coming out my ears and every one of my body orifices, and you sound like one of those little sunshine patriot boys who want to call up liberal talk show. Hey, I just started listening to you. Let me ask you something. How many of them boys were drafted? Go to hell, Greg. You think those folks would have signed up if they knew Rummy wasn't going to give them body armor? You think those people would have signed up if they would have known the Humvees they were going to drive around in were unprotected? They're going to have their arms and legs blown off? Go to hell, Greg! God, how many of them people got drafted? Okay. Now that we've disposed of the half-wit from North Carolina, Dr. Dave is calling from Columbus, Ohio. Dr. Dave?
Mike. Yeah, last time I was Dave, and I called on Phil Oak's birthday, but tonight I'm Dr. Dave, just to distinguish from all the other Daves that might call.
Okay.
And like some of these other callers, I while I'm waiting, I try to take notes to streamline and be less rambling. Yeah. I hope it works, because such a strategy can backfire at times.
Well, let me just mention something. I've got to do a break. Can you hold on?
In fact, I think it would be easy for all of us if I held on a bit.
Okay, why don't you hold on? And we'll come back after the break and see what you got to say, Dr. Dave. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy. Except you, Greg. Go to hell, Greg. We'll be back after the break. This is NOVAM Radio. Welcome back, 7 past the hour. Oh, this is the Malloy program, as you well know. Let's go back to Dr. Dave, who has called in from California. Thanks for holding on, Dave. Where is Dave? There he is.
Hello, Dave. Mike.
Hello, Dave.
The doctor is still in.
Okay.
Yes, thank you. Well, and, of course, always the third and final act, beginning with something from Every Good Boy Deserves a Particular Favor.
Yes.
Yeah, so anyway, the big laugh as I look at my notes here, and I was never a note taker in college, is the point is I try to do this to streamline and take up as little amount of time as possible, but what I look at is the most the undisciplined sort of spontaneous bot prosody that has been out of fashion for so long.
Uh-huh.
I would like to clear up on a trivial note the sort of mini controversy about Jesus H. Christ and what does the H stand for?
Sure, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I this is just for my own private research, but it's either Heinz or Helmut. I'm not sure which yet, but I have narrowed it down.
Okay, Heinz or Helmut?
Yeah, it's some sort of Nordic, Edic kind of a trip, you know.
Yeah, when you look at pictures of Jesus, it'd have to be that, you know, when you stop and think historically, he was a Palestinian Jew. I know, where's Palestine? But, you know, little short, squat guy that walked around telling people to love their neighbors, and never mind.
Yeah, I know. I think it's all the psychedelic Wagnerian input over the years.
I think you're very right.
Against all medical advice, I insisted on consuming. But back to business here. Yeah, I'm going to edit down the notes that I've taken. Don't want to take too much time here, other than to say that. Initially, you were talking about something that touches us all that have been concerned about progressive matters, and particularly in times of war and peace, and the personal sense of shame and or guilt that especially old of us, the older of us who still remember antiquated notions such as shame and guilt feel.
Right.
In my sense, it's a combination of a perpetual lack of health and a consistent combination of being busted for political and political activities, sometimes on, sometimes off medications, where they take my ID away and stuff. So,
yeah.
But the thing, you know, the thing is, as you know, I think it's the 27th of January, there is something coming up I think it's one of these March to the Pentagon deals, is it not?
It's a big demonstration in D.C.
But doesn't it? Well, okay, there is a follow up, I guess, to what is currently the going through the halls of Congress as the new 110th Congress kicks in. But there was, I read something about the march to the Pentagon, and of course, I flashed back on
Abby Hoffman,
October 21, 1967. Abby Hoffman, and of course, Ed Sanders, out demons out.
Right,
I always had to call up with at least one countercultural reference.
Trying to levitate. I remember Jerry Rubin and the original Yippies, Abby Hoffman. They tried to get the idea across that if enough people encircled the Pentagon and chanted the right, synchronicity of the Sanskrit Om, it would levitate the Pentagon.
It would raise about 40 feet and then turn orange.
Right.
And dissolve.
See, that's what we need. Why are all these people dead? We don't need somebody
exactly.
like me screaming at some freak out of North Carolina. We need the Yippies to get out there and murder these bastards with humor.
Yeah, I make no apologies. The Yippies, and I mean, going back before that, you had cats, as you know, like Saul Alinsky and stuff.
Yes, organize.
And, you know, and Bertolt Brecht, and I mean, agitprop and guerrilla theater. Man, that stuff is timeless.
I know.
You know, and it's just they don't talk about it now because it's all been systematically forgotten and drummed out. I was watching also when Cindy Sheehan and her fellow American patriots came in and interrupted the press conference of the filthy corporate Clintonista Rahm Emanuel pro-war punk.
Right, right.
And, of course, surprise, surprise, they were dismissed as crazies, as always. Now that, you know, we expect that.
Sure.
Including especially by the Democratic establishment. But I'm thinking, right, these people apparently don't remember the Boston Tea Party and all that stuff. It's like a revolution is fine as long as it ended over 200 years ago and all that.
Yes,
as I look at my notes here, I wanted the last two things because I don't want to think of too much. Oh, yeah, you know this thing about this? Yeah, this is pretty important, man. First of all, you notice that fat pig bastard violated a rule of House protocol. The old speaker is supposed to hand over the gavel to the new, but the guy is either too porcelainly, obscenely obese or too petty-minded or both that he had John Boehner take over duties and violate that law. I actually didn't notice it at the time because my attentions were divided.
Yeah.
But in retrospect, it looks unseemly.
It does indeed. I thought you were going to say that off camera, Hastert was peeing in the aisle or something because he couldn't make it to the John. I don't know. Hastert Hastert turns my stomach. He's Jabba the Hastert. I just can't stand this guy.
Well, I'm still waiting for the official Dennis Hastert workout tape.
Yeah, right. Well, don't hold your breath on that one. All right, what's the last one, Dr. Dave?
Okay, thank you. Thanks for giving me that other
one. No, what's the last one?
Yeah, exactly. I understand that.
Oh.
The last one is this. The last one is that, and this is the more serious one, I think, is that the deal with the Democrats and how they're going to approach their new position as a majority, as controlling both houses of Congress,
right.
To varying degrees, is that one of the great things about Democrats is that no matter how often, they never, ever get the lesson from the people because they, to this day, they insist on having the failing strategy of a phalanx of corporate, narrow-minded, myopic consultants saying, we don't want to worry our consultant donors and so on. So we can't, you know, we have to say, well, we don't want to impeach. We don't want to stop funding against the war.
Mm.
And from my own talking, and I'm sure you and lots of people listening to this show, hell, and this includes my 83-year-old mother, who was a Tom Dewey Republican.
Oh, my God.
She said, you know, the only reason I voted for these Democratic bastards is that they would impeach this son of a bitch war criminal and get him out, you know.
Right.
She voted for Nixon, Ford. She voted for Reagan. And she's, you know, and she's now, she's ashamed and she can't take it anymore. And they're still blinded by this bipartisan nonsense. I would say, in my last sentence as I close, I would just historically, for recent precedent, suggest that, you know, back in the Vietnam days, when the Democrats had huge majorities in the House and Congress, and it was LBJ in Vietnam, uh-huh. you had people like Fulbright and McGovern and McCarthy and so on
right.
taking them on
right.
against the Vietnam War. And hell, even with the Ford funeral, you had people like Javits and Weicker, you know,
yes.
saying, we've got to impeach this guy.
I know. You're absolutely right, and I get the point. And Dr. Dave,
yeah.
We love you. We have to go. Thanks for checking in, okay?
It's great talking with you.
All right, sir.
Talk to you again sometime.
I hope so. My pleasure.
Thank
you very much. My best to your mom. All right, stick around, Truth Seekers. Get ready to dance when we come back. We're going to dance, all right? Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
I have said repeatedly, we are in a dangerous phase of this war. And as we learned, we lost life. But nevertheless, it is worth it, and it is necessary.
Yeah, well, send your daughters then, George. Huh? It's worth it, and it's necessary, and we will have lost life. It is 21 past the hour. Christy, welcome to the program in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Christy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
First of all, I wanted to address the idiot that called before Dr. Dave.
Oh, yeah, the guy from North Carolina?
Yeah, I wanted to commend you because I'm actually an officer, and my friends and my comrades that are actually in Iraq right now.
Okay, Christy. I appreciate you checking in, Christy. We just have to kind of watch the language, all right? So we'll catch you next time around. All right, Bill emails us in. Hi, Mike. This is how the origin of Jesus H. Christ. Bill writes, hi, Mike. When Sam Clemens was in Nevada's Virginia City during the Silver Rush working as a newspaper reporter and typesetter, he didn't have room at the end of a line of copy to spell out Jesus Christ for a religious posting, so he shortened it to J. Christ to make it fit. He was summarily chewed out by the publisher that the name of the Savior could not ever be abbreviated. So at the next opportunity, Sam took his admonition to heart and spelled out Jesus H. Christ. That may have been the moment Samuel Clemens became Mark Twain. Yeah, that's right. I've heard that before, Bill. Thanks for the refresher. All right, I promised that we would dance. We need to get up and stretch a little bit. It's just been real goofy in here tonight. So, all right. Oh, my God. All right, get your partner. Let's strike up the music. Let's do it.
Someone stole their keys car. Someone stole their keys car from the butcher shop. Who stole the keys car? Who stole the keys car? Who stole the keys car from the butcher shop?
Hey!
It was hanging from the rack. Someone stole the keys car while I turned my back.
Hey!
Who stole the keys car? Who stole the keys car?
Who stole the keys car? Someone called the cop. Hey! Come on, get up, get up, get up.
Bring me back my Kishka. Who stole the Kishka? Who stole the Kishka? Who stole the Kishka? Someone called the cop. Hey! Yama Shambatika. Yama Shambatika. Yama Shambatika. Ho!
He found the Kishka.
He found the Kishka. He found the Kishka. Hung it on the rack. Hey! Hey! Come on, dance, 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 dance. What? My God. Whew. All right, everybody feel better? Man. Every time I hear that, I want to go get my bowling ball. I swear to God I do. Now, see, I don't know if you all get up in polka, but we do here at the Malloy Studio whenever Kathy plays that. Oh, my God, all those years of smoking. Earlier tonight, we shared something with you that's at Daily Coast, and I've had a couple of people email in and want me to post on my website, which... I'm uncomfortable doing because it's at Daily Coast. It was a piece written by James Risser, and it says, put down the champagne, Nancy. Go to Daily Coast and read it and print it off, and then you have your own copy. It's Put Down the Champagne, Nancy, and it's a very good piece written by James Risser, and you need to, for those of you who would like to have that or to read it again, especially the 6 points that he is suggesting that Pelosi and the gang get to immediately. No Republicans required. You need Republicans to remove somebody from office with the trial in the Senate, but you damn sure don't need them for the 6 things that James Risser pointed out. So, okay. All right, we have a break coming up here. And then we will come back and take phone calls, okay? Wasn't that fun? Don't you feel better now that you got up and moved around a little bit, huh? Nothing like a good polka to get your blood flowing.
There must be some mistake. I didn't mean to let them take away my soul. Am I too old? Is it too late?
Who stole the Kishka? Never mind.
Screaming with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-six before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Eric is calling from Miami. Eric, welcome to the program. We'll have Eric in a second. There we go. Hey, Eric.
Hey, Mike Malloy, how's everything? I'm a 22-year-old calling out of Miami, Hispanic, and we all do respect. I want to say God bless you for having a radio show and for you enlightening us.
Well, I appreciate that, Eric. But remember, I'm just a talk show host. I respect you. I'm glad you called in. What's up?
And pretty much, like I say, I want to welcome you back to Miami. You know, I also want to give a big thanks to WINC 940 for having you back.
Amen to that, brother.
Talk about, what do you know about South Florida politics? I've noticed that.
Not much.
Hispanics, we've been voting a lot to get a lot of Cuban Americans into Congress and stuff like that. Why? Because we thought that they will help us out, but we're noticing now, we're starting to open our eyes now that they're only helping themselves. That's
who, the politicians?
Yeah, they're only helping their own people. Putting guys like Mel Martinez and Ileana Ross Layton and Mario and the Ballard brothers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, other Hispanics, non-Cubans, have voted for these guys to sort of help us out, the Hispanic community. But it turns out that they've only helped their own selves out, their own Cuban community out.
Yeah, that's true, and that's a shame because there are issues that concern the Hispanic community that should be addressed. Let me ask you something. What do you feel about the effort, so-called, on the part of the Republican Party to, reach out to Hispanic voters?
They playing the game. It's the brain smarts of Karl Rove. They playing the game. I mean, you know, as you guys saw how much illegal immigrants are here. Illegal immigrants. But imagine how much legal immigrants are here. How much naturalized U.S. citizens are here. You know, so they see that. So, I mean,
the way I feel about the immigrant thing is, first of all, my grandparents were immigrants. So, you know, that's what this country is. This country is nothing but immigrants who came over and beat the hell out of the Native Americans and took over. So let's get that established right at the beginning. And then we made laws and said, well, this is how you have to do it. What is weird to me about the Republican Party is, on the one hand, they talk about they're trying to court the Latino or Hispanic vote. On the other hand, they seem to be saying that Latino or Hispanic people are mostly thugs and criminals who come across illegally and so on and so forth. I'll tell you what, there's two things. If U.S. imperialism hadn't, for the past 200 years, exploited Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, Panama, well, not Panama, it wasn't there, all of the countries in Central America, and in Mexico, hadn't exploited them, that's A. And B, if American corporations would start paying a minimum wage in this country of $12, $14, $15 an hour, then all the white people who live here and the black people who live here who are whining about, well, I'm not going to, and I don't mean whining in a negative sense. I would whine, too, who are saying, you know, I'm not going to work for $4 or $5 an hour. And Hispanic or Spanish speakers who come here, whose own country has been so decimated by Yankee imperialism, if you will, and they will work for that money. So make the wages $14, $15 an hour minimum, and all of a sudden you don't have an illegal immigration problem. Because if there's no jobs here, no crappy-ass jobs that pay very little, then people are not going to risk coming across deserts and rivers and fighting past these so-called Minutemen with their AK-47s to come to this country to work. But, so that's my take on that.
You brought up a good point, and very quick. It's funny how they talk about the river and all of that, but they're forgetting that over here there's always a raft coming in full of Cubans.
Right.
And they're not... they're not correlating that, you know,
right.
Like
what's the rule down there? If a Cuban,
if they touch water, right, if they touch U.S. soil, they're U.S. citizens. But
they're
it's
home
like
free.
Over here almost every day.
But if you're Haitian and you touch American soil, they will lock you up in the South Florida Detention Center until they can send you back to that hellhole that, again, the United States is partly responsible for creating, Haiti.
Exactly.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
Exactly. And I've learned all that through you, and I just want to thank you and your family and the whole Nova M Radio for bringing you back.
Well, that's very kind. Eric, take care. I appreciate you checking in. Call again. We'll talk again. Who we got? RJ from North Carolina. RJ, welcome to the program.
Hey. I'm awake.
You what?
I'm awake.
All right, good. What's up, RJ?
Hey, man, I just wanted to call in. I heard that guy earlier from North Carolina. I'm from the same part.
Hey, I went to school in Raleigh. I've lived in Raleigh twice. I love North Carolina. North Carolina didn't do that to him.
No, he must be up in the mountains somewhere.
Well, even so. I mean, you have fools like that in Midtown Manhattan. You have jerks like that in San Francisco, San Diego, Omaha. You know, there's no one part of the country that has an exclusive franchise on half-wits, especially somebody that says, well, how many of those people were drafted? You know, that is such a right-wing, nasty-ass, murderous point of view that I can't give it any airtime. I can't respect it. I just want to get rid of somebody like that. Get him off my program.
But you don't have to. You don't have to apologize for North Carolina, my friend.
I appreciate that. Basically, I was just calling in. That really pissed me off, that guy did. But you hit a good point earlier when you were talking about our reservists and everything. They're there for an immediate backup. Like if something was to happen that is, you know, you can't resist it. Like we're forced into war and this is our last stand. But those guys need to be here for stuff like Hurricane Katrina and other things like that. I mean, we could have sure enough used more choppers down there, more search and rescue, more everything.
Absolutely.
And things like that are happening everywhere. And I think you just went way over. I do agree with you. And I don't think people look at the reserves as much as what you pointed out that much about an hour ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to, you know, just light on it just a little bit. But that's very important here on the front side because, you know, everybody pointed the finger at FEMA and the state and local governments and stuff. There's only so much those guys can do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we got backup plans. And we don't need to show our ace and throw it overseas where it shouldn't be in the first place.
That's
we need
right.
those guys back here.
You know, thank God for the Coast Guard. If you remember those horrible pictures after Katrina flooded New Orleans, and most of the pictures came from New Orleans, but what you saw was a Coast Guard helicopters and Coast Guard search and rescue people acting pretty much on their own, just rescuing people. Can you imagine? Can you imagine if the Army Reserve, if the National Guards, if all of those soldiers had been available from Mississippi, wherever, not just the three states hit, but from all over the South, the Midwest, and I say the South and Midwest because it'd be quicker, you know, for a quick deployment to go down there and help. But no, they're over fighting Bush's phony-ass war and killing people and getting killed. It is, you know, what these people have done, RJ, to our military is just, I mean, I can't... It's hard for me to even comprehend what they've done to us.
I do agree, and I'm a former sailor, and I spent 6 years in the Navy, and like that guy was saying, you know, they enlisted. I agree with you. I signed up to protect our Constitution and also my wife and my family and all my friends and people like yourself, too.
Sure.
Not to go over there just to beat a big bully on the street or something.
That's right.
And, yeah, I mean, you can tie everybody into everything. If you really want to tie, I mean, if you want to say that they had a hand in 9/11 and everything, heck, every time we fill up at the gas pump, we're playing some small part if you want to get that picky about it.
No, that's the truth.
And the people just got to come to realization. That place is a slaughterhouse over there for us and them. I think some guy on CNN a couple of weeks ago, I don't watch TV that much, but I did flip through, and he had a great idea about those guys have been fighting each other for hundreds of years to divide that country up because us as the world want it to be Iraq, but Iraq don't want to be Iraq. They want to be three separate, you know, societies.
Well, Iraq never existed until about 80 years ago anyway, so...
We're pretty good at creating countries, aren't
we? Yeah, we are, aren't we? And the imperial powers, look what they did to Africa. People talk about, well, what's wrong with the Africans? I'll tell you what's wrong with the Africans. That also was a continent full of nation states, tribal nation states. And when Portugal and France and the United Kingdom and all those colonial, Holland, and to a lesser degree, the United States, when we divided that country into so-called, with that continent into so-called countries to satisfy what we were after, it just guaranteed that entire continent would be in the horrible shape that they're in now. So you're absolutely right about Iraq. RJ, I got to leave it there. Thank you, man. I appreciate you checking in. I hope you call again, okay?
No problem. Take
All
care.
Right, sir. Take care. Yeah. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
the spirit of the powers that be today. Hey Joe, where you going with that gun in your hand? You can take your revenge, but you'll still feel bad. There must be more to life than lucky strikes and some unlucky ones. Folded flags and pipes and drums.
Email here from Ellie regarding the first caller from North Carolina, whatever his name was, the one that was talking about volunteers or not being drafted. Ellie writes, Mike, in your litany of things the troops did not volunteer for, don't forget they didn't volunteer to perform a first strike attack against a sovereign country. No small matter. Yeah, you're right, Ellie. Thanks to the usual crew of liberals and progressives and madmen and women who put this program together tonight. Ian Huff, engineered in Phoenix, also handled your calls. Thanks to Chris in Minnesota, Mark Marshall, our moderators at MikeMolloy.com, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, who archives the program. And this whole thing is overseen by She Who Must Be Obeyed, Catherine Bay, our executive producer. Excuse me, back to phone calls. Jeff is calling from DeKalb, Illinois. Hey, Jeff.
Hi, Mike. This is John Pate, intern in DeKalb.
Hey, Jeff.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hi, this is the unpaid intern in DeKalb.
Yeah, I heard you the second time, but go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I served, and right as my first enlistment was about to get over, I got extended.
Uh-huh.
The people who enlisted, who are serving now, enlisted after September 11th because they thought they were going to go after Osama.
That's right.
They enlisted because they thought they were going to find the weapons of mass destruction that were going to save our country. Their enlistments were based on lies that were told to them.
Right.
When I was in, they had what we called a reduction in force. And I seem to remember it was Dick Cheney who was the Secretary of Defense at the time. Anybody who wanted out, except for certain fields like medical and dental, and those who had orders and those who were overseas, mm-hmm. were allowed to get out.
That was during Gulf War I.
Yes, sir. Yes, right. sir. If they wanted, you know, if they feel so confident that these troops who have served in the theaters of operation, who are serving in the theaters of operation, if they're so confident that they want to stay there and or reenlist, give them the same option.
Yeah.
Give them the same option.
Sure.
Because what's happening now is they're saying, yeah, you're due to get out, but then you'll be recalled and you won't get the bonus. So you might as well reenlist now and get your money and your benefits.
Yeah.
That's exactly what is happening.
That really sucks. And, you know, I'm thinking something else, too. When people join the military, essentially they're signing a contract. If the other side of the contract, the U.S. government, has fraudulent terms in that contract, i.e. it's a war on terror, or the implication is that what you just said, that people are going to on a search and destroy mission or a policing activity to find Osama bin Laden or whoever the government tells us is responsible for that attack.
Or to liberate a country that's another country that's already been invaded.
Yeah, now if that's not the case, then doesn't that make the contract fraudulent? I know I'm really grasping at straws here. I'm just tossing it out for the hell of tossing it out. But I get your point. I get your point.
Could I just remind everybody about the mobilization on the 27th of January?
Yes, yes. Talk about it. We had a caller from California wanted to know about more about that. Dr. Okay. Dave.
I've just got the website on the favorites, but I just wanted to remind folks it's United for Peace and Justice.
Peace and Justice, right.
Right, and it's January 27th.
Code Pink is involved in that. I believe World Can't Wait is involved in it. United for Peace and Justice, which is one of the organizations that put together those pre-war demonstrations that so many of us attended by the hundreds of thousands. What website do you have? Is it
UnitedForPeace.org.
UnitedForPeace.org.
Right.
And that's where people can get all the information
they want. Yeah, www.UnitedForPeace.org. You know, United for Peace, all one word.
Right.
But I'd also like to give a shout-out to the person who turned me on to this, Peter Wilt.
Peter Wilt?
Yes, he ran the Chicago Fire soccer team when we were in Chicago.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, Chicago.
Stop bad-mouthing all professional athletes. Some of them are not paid very much.
Well, I know. I just professional baseball players, basketball players, and football players to me are just have become scum.
Not the guys who are making $12,000 a year.
No, certainly not those guys.
Mike, I got to get back to work.
All right, Jeff. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate it. Take care. You have a nice evening. Corey is calling from South Florida. Hey, Corey, we got about 40 seconds here, pal.
All right, I'll make this quick. First thing, thanks for coming back.
Thanks to WINZ for putting us back.
Oh, of course. I wanted to comment on Greg, guy from North Carolina. I am sick and tired of people, these right-wing nut jobs, trying to pretend that they're supporting the troops. If they were supporting our troops, they would make sure all of our troops get the right funding they need, the right benefits they need, and that they come back alive. This is bull, okay?
Yeah.
We need to get on this Democratic Congress and put the feet to their fire to their feet to make sure that they get this job done and stop this partisan, this crazy talk that they're talking about partisanship.
It has to happen. There's no such thing as bipartisanship in Washington, D.C., and there shouldn't be. It should be a blood sport, because that's what it is. Hey, Corey, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. We'll talk again, okay?
Thanks.
All right, Corey. Take care. Thanks for participating tonight, however you did that, okay? I appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.